Welcome to this special episode of the On Call Empath. This is part of the Elite Coaches series. You know, in this episode, we're going to take a look at what happens when our abuser passes away, especially a narcissist. You know, what type of thoughts do we have? Do things get better automatically, or do we continue suffering? There's something called trauma bond. A lot of people have a hard time letting go. My special guest, Amanda Bucci, she is one of the best in her fields of study, and that's why I asked her to be part of this Elite Coaches series. What I do is I look for a pool of guests that are the experts in their field, and I choose one to be on this part of this series. And Adriana has definitely helped hundreds of people all over the world. She's got over 100,000 followers on Instagram almost, and she continues to have a passion for helping people. In fact, she's going to be talking about her own abuse with her mother, and we're going to get to the bottom and ask the hard questions of, is there a cure for narcissists? Do they really ever change? You know, what are some of the things to look for? Any red flags? You know, how do we spot one? And these are some things that are very hard to do unless you're a trained specialist or you went to school for this, or, you know, because there is no, you know, cookie cutter, you know, there is no like 100% way of knowing if somebody's a narcissist or not. I mean, there are certain traits and things, and that's what we're going to break down here. If you're going through any mental health issues, please go see a qualified physician. This is just a conversation between both of us because we've both experienced almost the same thing with, abuse of a narcissist. So I hope you enjoy this podcast episode. This is part of the Elite Coaches series, which is part of the which are the best out of the best coaches that I research, and I put them on a platform here for the world to listen to. Thanks again for being a part of this community, and sit back, relax, and let's go ahead and get started. Guys, I'm excited for my next guest. We have Adriana Bucci, who has been on my podcast before. So this is like the second part. Super excited. She's a narcissist abuse recovery coach. Welcome back.
Thanks so much for having me back here, Raj. I'm super excited to chat with you today.
Yes. And I always like watch your videos. They like very entertaining, but it makes sense just the way you come across. And it's really opened up a lot of things, especially with narcissism. So all you guys definitely go check her out. Almost 100,000 followers. So you're doing very well. Just before we get started, what have you been up to? Just like, I know it's been almost like a year since we've had you on the podcast. What kind of things have you been doing lately?
So a lot has happened since we've talked. I think I was probably still doing like one-on-one coaching when we talked last. So I moved on to group coaching, burnt out a little bit from that, got COVID.
So sorry.
Took forever to recover. And now I'm offering a community. So it's actually, you know, amazing. It's actually affordable. Anyone can join. They get access to all of the information that I have to offer, like courses on boundaries and like processing your emotions and all that fun stuff. Sure. And everyone can connect with each other. So that's kind of been what I've been up to. And I'm super, super excited about it.
Awesome. And just for those who are new, who just started kind of listening to my podcast, maybe they didn't listen to the first episode. I know that you went through a lot with narcissism and your situation. If you can kind of just like give a quick background of like what you've been through, and then we'll just kind of jump right into like narcissism and all that good stuff.
Sounds good. So I was actually raised by a narcissistic mother, and I didn't realize it until I was actually going through a breakup with a narcissist. And it was a very short, like 3-monther kind of relationship, but I was so confused that I started Googling this guy's behavior during and subsequently, like just after the breakup. Yeah. And eventually, you know, down that Google rabbit hole, I found those lists on, you know, 10 signs you have a narcissistic mother.
There you go. Check, check, check.
Yeah, you know, out of curiosity, I sort of clicked on that. Everything kind of fell into place. And then I went into denial for about a year and a half after that,
Sure.
and then got confronted with actual irrefutable legal documents and proof that,
Wow.
yeah, my mother absolutely was a narcissist. She, like, you know, estranged me from my father, brainwashed me into hating me, parental alienation, all that fun stuff. So
Yeah.
basically, a conversation with him revealed all the truth. And I didn't really start my healing process until 3 years after I found all the legal stuff because I didn't know healing was possible. I was in therapy for years and years, never got any tools, never got any, you know, information about emotions for that matter.
Right.
And pretty much I got chronic pain from 2015 to 19. It was actually all a manifestation of my repressed emotions from the childhood trauma of being raised by a narcissistic mother. So did the work,
Yeah.
healed. Here I am. That's kind of the Cole's Notes
That's your
version.
story.
Yeah. And my
Yeah.
mother did pass away actually 2 years ago. So I've been sort of advocating for adult children of narcissists who are like afraid of going no contact because what if they die kind of thing. But at the
Yeah.
end of the day, your life is more important. Your sanity is more important.
Yes. And that leads me to the very first question. I'm sure a lot of people that are tuning in want to know, like, what happens when a narcissist passes away? Some people think that all of a sudden, magically, their life's going to get better. In my experience and a lot of the stuff that I've heard, it's like it may like not get better right away. What is your take on that? And how did you deal
So
with that?
yeah, it really depends. My life definitely got a lot better. It sounds awful to say that, but you know, when you've been abused by this person, it does not matter if that was your mother. And I was very lucky because I had already been doing my own inner work for about a year before, you know, a year and a half actually, before this all sort of went down. And so, of course, I still had a roller coaster of emotions to go through. Of course, I am a human. So, you know, there was guilt, but then there was also relief and then guilt for feeling the relief and like all the things, of course. And of course, there was me like second guessing everything I had done. Was I a good daughter? Blah, blah, blah. But eventually I realized that was never my job to be a good daughter and all that. And, you know, it's all that conditioning definitely will come up for you when that inevitably happens. But the thing is, it's like if as long as you're processing the emotions as they come, things will eventually get better. And I mean, you know, when you're dealing with a narcissist, you have no idea what kind of things will surface when they pass away. So I had to settle a few legal disputes for her. It was like a whole thing, like just the whole estate situation with that. Like it was just a complete disaster. So I feel like everybody's situation is going to be completely different, but very similar, but different like situations. But at the end of the day, all the emotions that are associated with this are pretty much going to be universal. And what matters the most is that you're processing and working through those emotions rather than repressing them, because that's what's ultimately going to lead you to realizing that, you know, this, it just sort of is what it is. And, you know, it doesn't mean that you're not going to grieve other people that you actually care about. It's just this one particular person, and sort of separating grief and abuse and being okay with sort of like both being a thing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, very interesting. And for a lot of people that are listening, if there is like, I don't know if there's like a sure tail way to kind of identify, you know, who's a narcissist and who's not. Maybe somebody has narcissistic traits. Maybe there's a spectrum, but typically in your experience, especially with the work you do, it's better to ask anyone, but I'm sure you would be the perfect person to ask this to. But does it normally start off like far as red flags? What are some things that you would say, okay, these are some traits that check off. Like I know you mentioned like a list, you know, that might be out there somewhere, but what are some things that you can kind of put on a list that's like a red flag, like, okay, this person could be a narcissist? 'Cause it's definitely hard to just say, okay, that's by just looking at someone's behavior. 'Cause most of the population, they say, I don't know how much, it's a very low percentage of being a narcissist. That's what I heard. Correct me if I'm wrong.
So you heard correctly because that's what's in the statistics.
Yes.
And that,
I'm like, that can't be true. It's like 99% in my life.
right? Exactly. Exactly. But you have to put it into perspective that, like, no narcissist really gets diagnosed, realistically
There
speaking,
you
right?
go.
So
There you go.
that's where all those missing numbers are from. I think it says like 1% officially, which is a joke.
Yeah. Wait,
Yeah,
where are
absolute
they?
joke. Yeah, no, they're everywhere. There's way more narcissists than we think out there.
Yeah.
And it's, you can, I like that you asked this question because you can go through all the lists, but then the thing that I don't like particularly about the lists is that anyone can read them and think, okay, well, they got 4 out of 5. So they don't do this one thing. So
Maybe.
maybe that means they're not a narcissist. Or, for that particular list, they've only done 1 out of 5 things or 1 out of 10 things. And there's so many different things they can do or say that can make them a narcissist. But I would encourage people to just sort of ignore all of that and tune in to how you feel. When you're
Exactly.
interacting with this person, is there any guilt, shame, or fear in particular? Those three emotions are really the three musketeers of emotions that narcissists want to induce into their targets in order to make them easier to control. So, even if you're feeling just confused around this person, confusion is always a red flag for abuse. So that, in my opinion, is a better way to gauge what you're dealing with. And at the end of the day, it kind of doesn't even matter if this person's officially a narcissist or, they match all the signs or whatever. At the end of the day, what's important is you're doing your own inner work. You're focusing on your emotions because that is going to give you the most clarity you could possibly ever get. Like, I can tell you all the signs that I can tell you, and some things might click in, but until you actually notice what it feels like in your body to be conversing with this person that you suspect is a narcissist, nothing's really going to click. You have to understand it on an emotional level. So trying to look at it that way is very important. And I would encourage everybody to ignore the 1% statistic because they don't get diagnosed. And the ones that are part of that statistic are ones who have been diagnosed, but they've been diagnosed by force. So it could be because they committed a crime, for example.
Torts, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, you're not going to find somebody coming up forward and say, "Yeah, I'm a narcissist." Or even if you're having problems, like I've seen people in marriages, like with a narcissist won't go to therapy or, any of that kind of stuff because they don't want to be in that corner. Which leads me to the next thing is it wise, like let's say somebody's in a relationship right now with a narcissist and you suspect it. Would it be wise just to keep quiet and make a exit plan, or some people will just try to go head on, take the mask off, and it's probably not a good idea to confront them because I've done that in the past and it's been life threatening. It's a long story. Gun was
Wow.
like, yeah, it was
Oh
like a
my God.
roommate. He pulled out a gun. He didn't like point it at me, but he was like saying like I'm not leaving because this and that, and so I was scared for my life, and that's when I'm like,
Course.
this guy's a narcissist. He's been through 4 divorces. He's like acting crazy, drinking issue. So I've been through all of that, but trying to leave, trying to get away, is it wise to just kind of do it secretly rather than just trying to be like pointing fingers? Because if you hurt a narcissist, narcissists hurt. They usually come out with rage, and that's what I
Exactly.
experienced myself. But
Yeah, you're 100% correct. I'm so sorry that happened. That is messed up. Wow.
moved to Arizona in 2019. The guy was super nice, love bombing. Oh yeah, you can stay here as long as you want. Once you get your job set up, you can stay here, and I won't even charge you rent. I'm like, no, I'll pay rent. The minute I moved in, it was like, oh, you were married 3 times? Why are the door knocking? Like, police are like giving him papers from his like ex-wives and stuff. It was like red flags everywhere. And I'm like, how do I get out of here? Like, this was a mistake. And that's when things started to get out of hand. But I escaped, thankfully. I just, when
Good.
he went out one day, I just like went through the back door, put all my stuff in the car, and moved right back. But that was an experience.
Wow.
It definitely opened my eyes, and I don't think I'll ever have a roommate again after that. But
Yeah.
that
Don't blame
was
you at
my
all.
experience. Yeah, it
Yeah,
was
living alone
crazy.
is great.
Yeah, because you never know, like especially with somebody you've never met and your roommates. Like I've had many roommates, and I can tell you there's been a couple characters that that I could easily see as narcissists, but I was lucky to like get away and have an exit plan. But
Wow.
yeah. So my next question to you is, there's different types of narcissists. There's covert, overt, I think there's like seven, right? So in your opinion, can you just kind of touch on like more common ones that we typically see like in the workplace? Normally they're like people in charge, CEOs, doctors, people with power, which seems to be the case with a lot of narcissists.
Yeah, so I mean, overt and covert are pretty much the most common, and all the other subgroups of that, like it's either overt or covert at the end of the day. Overt ones are very easy to figure out that they are narcissists, so they're just the ones that behave like assholes, and everyone knows that this person's an asshole, and it's not a mystery. Whereas the covert ones, those are the ones you have to be careful with because you might not even realize that you're being love bombed by this person. Sometimes they can be very reasonable, and it can get very confusing. And there's also communal narcissists as well, which I think falls under the category of covert, where they do get into those positions of power in a way where it looks like they're doing something good. So maybe they do become doctors, therapists, priests. They run a religious organization or something of that nature, or they start like a dog rescue, like whatever it is that makes them look like a good person. And on the surface and on paper, it looks all great. And most people would believe this is a wonderful person. And then behind closed doors, a few select people know the real side of this person, but no one would ever believe them because of how insidious the manipulation tactics are. And they really do all the puppet mastering in order to ensure that no one's going to believe the victim when they say anything, if they ever say anything. So it just sort of a way for them to keep that cycle alive and well. So you really want to look out for the ones that, like, people who look like they're doing really good things, but then, behind closed doors with this person, it's sort of a different story. That is what you want to be aware of.
One thing I do notice, especially with empaths, we like to people please, obviously, but setting boundaries is a challenge for a lot of us empaths. So what would be the best way? Because obviously narcissists do not like boundaries. They will push and push and push. What's the best strategy to lay a good foundation for boundaries? Like, how would you do it? Because there's obviously you could do it with somebody who's fair, who's sane, but when you start to do it with a narcissist, they try to manipulate you and make you feel like there's something wrong with you for bringing it up. They don't allow it, especially, I'm sure you know very well, but better than anyone else. So.
Oh yeah. Totally. Yep. And the thing with the advice that you see out there and that you get from like your therapist who has no idea about anything about narcissistic abuse because it's not in the curriculum for whatever reason. All those strategies and tips like, "Oh, have a conversation. Make a sandwich where you say something nice." And then the meat is where you say the boundary, and then you say another nice thing. So it's like a boundary sandwich. That stuff does not work. It's never going to work. And you can try those strategies. You're going to be very disappointed if you do, because it's not going to work with a narcissist, because these tips do not take into account people who are on a mission to manipulate and destroy you and, try and have power and control over you. So I actually made a full 45-minute training on like the three mistakes to avoid when you set boundaries with a narcissist. It's free. I can send the link over to you as well, so you can share it if you want to, so people can watch it if they're struggling with this. Amazing. And basically, what you want to do is follow these strategies. So, the first thing is to not assume that you're dealing with a normal, healthy person because you're not, right? The second thing, and like to understand the cycle of abuse too, love bomb, devalue, discard, because those are the three things. One of those three things, or all three of those things, is what you're going to be met with when you set your boundary. So, they might love bomb you and start promising you the world and saying they're going to change and, you're right. And they might actually start saying things that are making sense because you know, not because they agree with you, but because they feel you slipping away. You're taking away the supply that they feel entitled to. So they might try to love bomb you. They might also try to devalue you to make you feel like shit about yourself so that you feel guilty for setting this boundary. Because someone who's in a state of guilt, of course, is easier to control. And, you know, they might discard you and say like, oh, I'm never talking to you again, only to come right back and love bomb you as if nothing ever happened a few weeks later or years later, months later. It doesn't matter. At the end of the day, they sometimes come back. Sometimes they don't. But, you know, discard is probably not going to be the first reaction they're going to have when you set that boundary. But it's going to be a whole thing. It's going to be dramatic. It's going to be a shit show. And so the best way to go about it is to, number one, journal before you're going to set that boundary, because that's going to help you to untangle any of the thoughts and emotions and feelings and, you know, kind of get you right back into the logic of why you're doing this and reminding yourself that you're not doing this because you have literally nothing better to do on a random Tuesday. You're doing this because there's been a pattern of nonsense going on for years, possibly decades, possibly your entire life, and you're done with it and you're allowed to be done with it. But the narcissist has such a sense of entitlement that how dare you? Right? They feel so entitled to that supply from you and those emotional reactions from you that they're going to push and push and push and push. So expecting them to is so important. Expecting the narc to narc is so vital, especially when it comes to setting boundaries, because then you can predict what they're going to say. It's not going to catch you off guard. And you're going to realize like, okay, this is what happens every single time that I try to set a boundary with this person. And then you get to stand in your power and not entertain the hissy fit that they're having by giving them any supply. Obviously, if they get violent or, you know, what happened to you and like they pull out a gun, you want to get law enforcement involved because that is wild. Sometimes they can, you know, escalate to that point. But that's a thing where like emotional work is not going to help you really. But, you know, if you're dealing with a not violent narcissist, definitely doing that emotional work, letting yourself feel any guilt, shame or fear, because those are those emotions that they like to use to control you with. And when you let yourself feel that, you let yourself process it, you can release it. And then you can see things more clearly. And of course, documenting why you're setting this boundary is another very important thing to do, because you're going to forget. And not because you have memory issues or anything like that, but because the way that narcissists manipulate you, they get into your emotions so well that, you know, it's so easy to believe the crap that they're saying. And then you start hearing the voice of your inner critic, which is the voice of the narcissist, really, at the end of the day. And then you start believing that, you know, you shouldn't be setting these boundaries. You're not worthy of these boundaries. You deserve this abuse, blah, 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 whatever that inner dialogue is. And so, you know, reminding yourself why you're doing this and sort of maybe even having a list documented of like all the situations that have happened that led you to this boundary. So that you can refer back to it anytime. And this is only for your eyes. You're not going to read this list to the narcissist, obviously, because that's, you know, the whole shame, rage trigger will happen. You want to stay safe about it. And, you know how it's going to go. So don't entertain the tantrum. And
So one question I would always wondered, and maybe you can shed some light on this. Is there a cure for narcissism or somebody that lacks empathy, or do they go through their whole life trying to get supply, trying to make people's lives, you know, upside down? Is there a cure for it, or is it just something that it's just luck of the draw? Like, imagine going through your whole life just having no empathy for human beings, and you get off on seeing other people suffer. And that's like the worst thing. And you're not, you don't even realize it. You don't feel anything. Like, to me, that seems like a hellish life to live. Like,
I don't think, but they're not suffering.
Oh, they're not? You don't think inside?
No, not at all. Like, if they were suffering, they would do something about it, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas when we're the ones who are the empaths, we are suffering from the abuse. And we end up suffering anytime the narcissist tells us that, like, we're doing something wrong or hurting them or whatever. And then we are the ones who end up going to therapy, trying to fix ourselves, but there's nothing wrong with us.
So, like, I know, like, sometimes when they lose that supply or they can't get access to that person, do they get depressed a little bit, or do they get a little down that they can't see this person suffer anymore? Or do they just move on to the next victim and just try to, because it feels like if they're not messing with someone's life, that they're not at peace. They have to have somebody in their life that they're screwing up
Pretty
mentally
much. They
with.
always have supply. Yeah. They've always got
There's no
different sources
shortage,
of supply. There's
basically.
no shortage of supply. Yeah. And the thing is, they've got so many enablers too that they get supply from the enabling. So basically, anyone who can make them feel like they are relevant, anyone who gives them attention of any kind, they're feeding off of that energy and getting supply from it. So if their main target sets a boundary with them, yeah, they're going to be upset. They're not going to get like depressed about it, but they're going to be rageful about it because the whole shame rage cycle, if you touch their shame, they go into a whole rage and temper tantrum and they're not adults at the end of the day. And like that's really what's going to happen at the end of the day. And they've got a lineup of people that they keep around to keep getting supply from. So they'll just go to whoever the next target is. This doesn't mean they're not going to stop trying to get supply from you as their target who just set a boundary with them. But the trick is you have to sort of stick to your guns. And they really go through their whole lives like this. Like my narcissistic mother took her BS with her to her deathbed. She even gave me the glare from her deathbed. Yeah. Yeah, it was wild. So, I mean, there was no apology, no deathbed confession, nothing like that. And I would encourage anyone who, has any hope for that to happen to just maybe throw that hope in the garbage because you're going to be very disappointed if you hang on to that hope. And I mean, lucky win if it does happen, but don't count on it because if you're dealing with a narcissist, they do not change, they don't want to change. Because it's been working out for them, right? All their manipulation tactics, they haven't really suffered too many horrible, severe consequences for it. Unless they kind of get in trouble with the law, maybe that will spark them to change. But like, do you really want to be around for that? Probably not.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
So, just wrapping up here, I want to give you like a scenario. I'm sure a lot of people could relate with this that are tuning in right now in this particular episode. Many of them are living with one, and sometimes like it's not easy just to get up and go. Maybe there's kids involved. Maybe there's work related, like they need a job, so they have to play the game, or whatever the situation is, they can't just get up and leave at this very moment. What kind of advice can you give to somebody who might be trapped in a relationship of some sort where they want to leave, but they're afraid that if they do, there's going to be consequences? Or sometimes when two people do leave, they get that trauma bond where they feel like they got to go back, and so they end up going back, and that cycle keeps continuing. And before you answer that, this is not medical advice, guys. This is just a conversation between us. Definitely go see a qualified physician if you're having any mental health issues. But in this question, that's what I'm getting from a lot of people that tune in, people that I coach, is that they are either living with one or they just left one, and they're just trying to make sense of what now. Like, my life was shit, and now he's gone or she's gone, and I can't live without them, type thing.
Yeah, so that's totally the trauma bond and the conditioning. Because the narcissist really does, when they do love bomb you, you do get that feeling like, I cannot live without this person. And anytime they do love bomb you, it reinforces it. And it's like, yes, this is what I've been after, right? Because it's just so cyclical. And it's like that intermittent reinforcement or whatever it's called. So just the best thing to do, really, is to focus on your emotions and be okay with how you feel. Remember, feelings are not facts. So just because you feel like you cannot live without this person, that's not true. And even,
That's
right?
it.
So
That's
it's
what
like
we
just
tell in our
reminding,
minds. Yeah.
exactly, reminding yourself of that and letting yourself feel through that feeling fully. because the feeling is what's causing the belief that, I need this person in my life. My life is going to suck without this person. And once you do sort of cut them off, you go no contact, it can get a little bit lonely because there's not that many people to talk to about this. And that feeling of loneliness can start to overpower you. But just keep in mind, loneliness feels a lot better than abuse. Right?
Sure does.
And the more that you actually start focusing on your emotions and how you're feeling and taking those little baby steps one day at a time, it's going to get easier and easier. But, when you're in that moment and you're sort of triggered and you're flooded with those emotions, just keep in mind, this is not a permanent state of being right now. Right now, that's what it feels like, but this will go away. It's just an emotion trying to mess with my head because of all the conditioning that the narcissist has used against me in order to mess with my emotions and get into my head. So you have to just really remind yourself of that. And if you can't leave right away, that is okay. It's, it sucks. It absolutely sucks. And obviously, like I said before, your physical safety, make sure that you are physically safe. Sure. Any violence, you get law enforcement involved. But, in the meantime, while you are coming up with your safe exit strategy, don't give them supply. So, Grey Rock method's the best way to do this. The narc's not going to be happy about it, but stick and commit to being that Grey Rock because that is what's going to have them kind of stop harassing you eventually. Yeah. Maybe not right away. And don't personalize what they're saying. They are just trying to project emotions onto you to keep you small and in their control. And you're the one who actually holds all the power because you're the only one who can control your emotional reaction to their nonsense at the end of the day. So just try not to give them any supply. You'll know when you're giving supply, you'll be tired. And so less of that and more focus on giving yourself supply, really. Like, pour that attention into yourself and your healing journey. You'd be surprised how far you can go.
Yes, very well said. Thank you so much for your wisdom today. It's just like every time I have you on the show. In fact, that previous episode, if you guys haven't checked it out, it's actually still doing very well. So I would definitely go listen to that and then listen, hopefully you can share this with any of your friends that are going through any type of narcissist abuse. You're one of the best in the biz. So thank you so much for being on this podcast. You're
Thanks
always welcome back. Yeah. Before we leave, can you just tell us where we can find you and any links that you would like to share with the audience?
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for the kind words. Thanks so much for having me back here. I'd love to definitely do this again.
Absolutely.
And you can find me at Let's Get Your Shift Together on Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, and Facebook, and whatever other social media I'm on. I'm sure there's more.
Right.
And I'll share the link to my community membership. It's super affordable. The early bird deal is going on until mid-October. So jump in before then to, take advantage of that. And basically, it's a really amazing support community with a whole bunch of survivors. And you get my support along the way. There's live events every month and courses, resources, audio lessons, all the things. And I look forward to having whoever is interested in joining in there. And it's letsgetyourshifttogether.com is my website.
All right, guys, I'll have that in the bio below. So if you guys want to check her out, definitely check out her Instagram. It's very, very informative. And with that said, keep moving forward. If you can, please like and share this episode for anyone that might be going through narcissist abuse. Maybe they could help somebody out there. That's the goal of this. So with that said, stay tuned for more episodes and we are out.